All right, good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday, September 14th, 1:10. For the last 10 minutes, we've been talking about a game plan for today. And I didn't come in with one. I have a lab, which is it's a worksheet on the mole. And so I was going to talk a lot about the mole today. But it also looks like you have exams in Lucas's class and in Cisco's class. Lucas is on Thursday. Cisco is tomorrow on Wednesday. And Cisco has put out a review sheet. And yes, Alejandro, we will definitely talk on dimensional analysis. It's a major topic on the exam. So we will, and I have more problems, more dimensional analysis problems if we want that we can do. And I can create them on the fly as well to do some more, to give you some more direction there. So let's start off. And I'll watch the time a little bit, try to make sure that we save enough time to be able to do everything. And let's just check in with some of these numbers. So I'm going to work from his review sheet, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to screen share my iPad as opposed to I know what I'll do. Let me share the iPad. And then while sharing this, what I will do is I will bring in okay, so this is the review sheet that we were looking at before, but now I've brought it into the iPad. So this gives us the ability to be able to work on it here, and we can address some of these numbers. Now, rounding to one sig fig and to two sig figs is not always an easy thing to do. What I like to do when I'm rounding to these is if I'm rounding to one sig fig, I'll drop my line and I'll look at doing my rounding. And I always equate this to money. And actually, maybe in equating it to money, maybe the best one to do to start off with is this one. So if you went to the bank and you had $5,209 in the bank, and you asked the bank about how much money do I have in my checking account, just round it off to the nearest thousand, and they said you had five. If you just wrote the five, that doesn't have the value. That's $5, which you know that you happen to have in your bank is $5,209, which a round number to one sig fig would be 5,000. So you never want to forget the zeros. You want to make sure that you always include the zeros. And I always say that if you take it to dollars and treat it like dollars, you'll make a lot less mistakes because most of us inherently know exactly how to deal with money in that way. If we want to round it and it's 5,209, and you want to round this to two sig figs, you're rounding at this point. Again, we don't want to forget the zeros. We round it out to 5,200 to the two sig figs. Okay, is that making sense in terms of the way that I'm dropping the line and the way that I'm looking at doing the rounding? Some of these other ones, if we're going to round it 0.0183, and we take and we do the rounding to one sig fig. In this case, when we do one sig fig and we do the rounding, we don't need to include zeros as placeholders for the value. It would simply be 0.02. If we're doing two sig figs and we're doing the rounding, 0.018. And so it makes a difference for these values, which are larger than one. So these values up here, which are larger than one, we need to be careful to make sure that we keep the zeros in order to keep the value. But as soon as you get to values that are less than one, these values that are less than one, we don't include the trailing zeros because the trailing zero would be viewed as a sig fig. And so it would be incorrect to include two additional zeros along with this value, because then that would be seen as three sig figs instead of the one sig fig, right? Remember that a value that is written in proper scientific notation always has the right number of sig figs associated with it. And so I could take this number and I could write this as 5 times 10 to the third, or this value here would be written as 5.2 times 10 to the third. The numbers down here, this would be 2 times 10 to the minus 2, or 1.8 times 10 to the minus 2. And we can see the difference that a value which is greater than 1 needs the zeros in order to hold its value. But written in scientific notation, those zeros go away. Same thing happens here. A value which is less than 1 should not have the trailing zeros, because if you put them there, they're significant. When written in proper scientific notation, the value would have no zeros following it. And so we could see the number of significant figures here in the one sig fig. That's not a good numbering or highlighting. Let's try this. There's my one sig fig. There's my two sig figs, one sig fig, two sig figs. Okay. Sig figs are the thing where people make the mistake the most. Is there any other value on here that you want to write the sig figs for or look at? Or do we feel like we've got sig figs under control? Let me see if I can find there. Now I can see you guys. Seems like things are pretty quiet, like sig figs might be under control. Okay, let's assume that to be the case. These are a horrible typeface. Whoever created this is, I don't think he created this. I think he borrowed this from someplace, but the creator of this, whoever created this typeface, is horrible. Express each of these numbers in standard form. So the main thing here to do is to watch that when you're looking at standard form, that if the exponent is positive, then what you are going to do is you're going to move to the right. If the exponent is negative, then what we're going to do is we're going to move the decimal to the left in terms of how we're moving the exponent. So when we take a look at this and we see that this is a positive 4 value, we're going to move that 1, 2, 3, 4 places to the right, or that's going to be 2, 4, and then I need to get in 0, 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, and there's my value, 24,000. Again, exponent positive. I'm going to skip over the 7 one because that's a lot, but I can do the 2 here. This is going to be 305. Let's find some negative ones that aren't too big. Here's a negative 2. So a negative 2, I'm going to move that decimal place over 2 places to the left. This is going to be decimal 0849. Or let's try the 4 one here. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, and 4. That's going to be the location of my decimal. And I'm going to get zeros in each one of those places. So that's going to be equal to the 0, 0, 0, 1, 2, 5 in terms of moving decimal places, both forwards and backwards. Everybody okay on scientific notation? All right, and expressing a number into scientific notation. If we want to express a value in scientific notation, we take the location of the decimal and we look at moving it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're moving at 8 spaces. This is going to be 8.76 times 10. We said 8 spaces to the 8th. So a value which is greater than 1, exponent is going to be positive. And a value which is less than 1, exponent negative. So again, decimal place, moving it 1, 2 places to the left. This equals 1.51 times 10. We moved it 2 times, and it's a value that is greater than 1, so the exponent should be positive. if we take a value which is less than one, this is a good one here. We're moving it one, two, three places. 6.7 times 10 to the third. But because this is a value which is less than one, the exponent needs to be negative. Okay. The seven that's over here, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Move it to the right of the first non-zero digit. That was seven places. This is seven times 10 to the minus seventh, being a value less than one. Okay, everybody good in putting things into exponential notation? Into scientific notation. All right, pure substances versus mixtures, elements, compounds, homogeneous, heterogeneous. When we look at pure substances, let me add a page. And then I think I actually want that page up here. When we look at a pure substance, these are broken up into two categories. We have elements. These are single symbols. Single symbols are things like H2, sodium, O2, N2, S8. It doesn't matter what the subscript is, as long as there is only one element symbol that is being shown. Those are elements. Compounds are comprised of two or more elements. And so H2O, sodium chloride, C6, H12O6. So these have two or more element symbols in whole number ratios. So those are our compounds. And then mixtures. A mixture can't be represented by a formula. So mixtures cannot be represented by a chemical formula. These are things that have two different components, things that may be like water with salt, sodium chloride. So this would be an example of salt water. And salt water is an example of something that is homogeneous. Homogeneous being a single phase, all one phase, no discernible difference in how the material, let me put it this way. Let's say that I take a solution that is of sodium chloride and water, and I've mixed together a certain amount of water and a certain amount of sodium chloride. Let's say that it is 25 milliliters of water and 1 gram of sodium chloride of salt. If I take this and distribute it into small containers, and I pour it into these different containers and I pour in different amounts. And in the first one, I put that amount, maybe this one I fill almost all the way up. And what happens is all three of these have the exact same ratio of salt to water. That's what we mean by homogeneous. We mean that the mixture is consistent and always the same, regardless of how much of it you sample. Wherever you sample, we see the exact same amount of salt to water. The other type is heterogeneous. heterogeneous mixtures are not consistent. The best examples may be granite, like a rock. Or another example may be muddy water, like river water. And so what we see here is that when we take and look at these different samples, that we find that we have dissolved things in them, and that these dissolved things, we may have different concentrations of solids. And depending upon where we sample, we may sample in one location where we look here, and looking here, we may have a certain amount of large amount of mud in this area. And over here in this area, when we sample, we'd get small amount of mud. And so if we take this and put it into different containers, the ratios are inconsistent. Same thing if we take sort of a granite rock and we look at these different mineral deposits that are in the rock. And sometimes we see locations where we have more of the minerals, and sometimes we see locations where we have less. And depending upon where you sample, you will see different ratios of the different materials. That's what we mean by heterogeneous as opposed to homogeneous, okay? So now what we can do is we can come over here and we can ask several questions about these materials and whether they fit into a pure substance or a mixture. So concrete, some of these are not easy to do, right? If you think about concrete, you think about something that has sand and lime, calcium carbonate, and the cement itself, porcelain cement, and water, and maybe even some rocks. And so this is a mixture. And then the question becomes, is it homogeneous or is it heterogeneous? Well, it really depends on the type of concrete and who's making the concrete. But most of the time, I think that because of the aggregate that's in there, the stones, that we would most of the time say that this is a heterogeneous mixture. As much as we would like it to be homogeneous, it's probably pretty heterogeneous. Okay, this one, sugar and water. So imagine taking sugar and dissolving it into water. Is this a pure substance or a mixture? What would we say? Would we say pure substance or would we say mixture for this? You want to throw it in the chat? I'm not seeing anything in the chat. You guys are hesitant. Does that mean you don't know? Or does that mean you're unwilling to answer?
Is it a pure substance?
It's not a pure substance because remember when we look at pure substance, pure substance is either a single symbol or you have two or more symbols, but the two or more symbols would be in combination with each other in whole number ratios. This is more like a mixture where I have two different things. I have sugar and water. So key into this, if you're keying into anything, it's that plus sign. The plus sign is going to tell you that this is a mixture. Or when you see things like with pulp, or let's see if we can find another one here. There's a plus sign. So the things that are plus signs like that, those things are going to be mixtures. But now you also need to know a little bit about how sugar dissolves in water. Have you ever seen sugar dissolved in water? And what does it look like when you dissolve sugar in water? Think about putting honey into your tea or coffee, or sugar into your tea or coffee.
It's dissolved.
Yeah, completely dissolves. And in that it completely dissolves and it is equal in all ratios, does that mean homogeneous or heterogeneous?
Homogeneous.
Homogeneous, good. This is a spot where I slow down a little bit because this is a spot where there's a lot of confusion sometimes. And people look at it and say, oh no, that's the easy part. But then you actually get to doing it and you realize, oh no, this isn't quite so easy. This is a little bit different. Okay, iron filings. I'm sensing a single symbol. What does that mean?
Iron.
It's iron, but is it a mixture or is it a pure substance?
A pure substance.
This is a pure substance. Is it a compound or an element?
Element.
Element, single symbol, good. Nice. Limestone, calcium carbonate. Is it a pure substance or a mixture?
Mixture, even though it doesn't have any add symbols.
Nope. So with these, when we're at mixtures, we really need to, I'm going to adjust this. I'm going to put and river water and. So we could say the word and. So here we're looking for and is really the big key word here. That there is something more. And so when we're looking at this, there's no and in it. This is an example of what we've got going on over here, where it's a compound, where it's a combination of things in a whole number ratio. Okay, there's no and, there's just ratios of 1 to 1 to 3. So this is an example of a pure substance. And this is an example of a compound. Orange juice with pulp. We didn't get to this one, but because there's pulp in it, you can imagine that there might be more pulp towards the bottom than there might be towards the top. What type of mixture would that be? Homogeneous or heterogeneous?
Heterogeneous.
Yeah, heterogeneous. Okay. This one, when we say the Pacific Ocean, that means everything in the ocean. That means not only the dissolved salts, that means the fish, that means the seaweed, that means everything in the ocean. What do we expect this to be? Is that, yeah, it's a mixture, good. Homogeneous or heterogeneous?
Heterogeneous.
Good. Air inside a balloon. Now, this one is deceptive because you need to know that when you fill a balloon, the balloon is going to have oxygen, of course, but it's also going to have nitrogen. It's also going to have some CO2. It may have many other gases that are in there inside the balloon. So what is this? Mixture, pure substance? What is it?
Pure substance.
Each one of these are pure substances, but when all these pure substances are mixed together inside the balloon, then what does it become?
Compound.
Becomes a mixture.
Mixture.
So these are, I should say, O2 and N2. And CO2, I should be consistent. That's my bad. I'll start trying to be consistent. So we started to use that word and. I'm going to keep trying to bring that word and back in here. It's good to though to remember this, though, that when we say and, that and could be the plus, and could be a comma. And equals plus equals a comma. And so all of these are ways of denoting mixtures. I would say another one with is probably another word that could easily denote a mixture. Okay, but we didn't deal with, if this is a mixture, is it heterogeneous or homogeneous? Now, these are gases, and you need to know a little bit about gases. Gases mix completely. Gases are almost always homogeneous. So when we see gas, homogeneous. Karen, what's the difference between heterogeneous and homogeneous? When we go back up here, homogeneous is something that is consistent all the way through. And no matter how many times I divide it up or how small or how large a sample I take, the ratios are always the same. Heterogeneous, the ratios are not the same. Heterogeneous can be things that are solids like rocks, where I may see a different ratio here than what I see over here. So the ratios differ in heterogeneous, whereas the ratios are the same in homogeneous. All right, aluminum.
Pure substance.
Pure substance, element or compound?
Element.
Good. Magnesium.
Pure substance.
Good. Element or compound?
Element.
Good. Acetylene, C2H2. Pure substance or mixture?
Pure substance.
Good. Compound or element?
Compound.
Good. Okay, tap water in a glass. I don't like this one because you need to know what's in tap water. You need a little bit more information. You need to know that within tap water, this is water and it may have some magnesium chloride and it may have some sodium chloride and it may have a number of different things. But it should look all the same. So is this a pure substance or a mixture?
Mixture.
Good. What type?
Homogeneous.
Good. I'm sensing that these are starting to feel better now.
Yes. Yes.
There's a reason that we go through these. Okay, that's good. I'm going to let you guys work on the rest of them, but that gives us a good sense there. We've done more than half of them, and I'm starting to sense that you guys are getting a handle on that. So that's good. Okay, physical and chemical properties. With physical and chemical properties, they have some definitions down here for us. It's helpful. Physical property, observed with senses. Determined without destroying matter. Physical properties generally are things like let's look at chemical properties too. Here, indicates how a substance reacts with something else. Matter will be changed into a new substance after the reaction. So physical properties are things like boiling points, melting points, density, color. We could think about viscosity, how thick something is, how fluid it is, how easy it moves. Chemical properties tend to be things like chemical reactions. These are things like burning Or these are things like, I'm trying to think of, if we see reacting, the word reacting or reaction, that tends to be the word that we look for there in terms of chemical properties. And so we can go down the list and we can ask, is something a chemical or physical property? What about a blue color? Is that physical or chemical?
Physical.
Yep. What about density?
Physical.
Good. Flammability, it burns.
Chemical.
Good. Solubility, dissolves. That's a hard one. What do you think?
Chemical?
I would put this as to chemical, but this one could be argued that usually when something dissolves, its property does not change. There is some differences that acids, when they dissolve, and bases, when they dissolve, they do change. And so chemical versus is physical. Solubility is a tricky one. I would put a star next to this and say that it really depends on the type of substance, and it's not a great question to ask. Reacts with acid.
Chemical.
Chemical. Supports combustion.
Chemical.
Yeah. Sour taste. Ooh. Also, I don't like that as much. Because when you taste something, you start to break it down in ways. And so I think that if we go with observed with senses, that when we say sour taste, I think that we would say that this is physical, but I can make an argument that that's something chemical that's taking place. Okay, I think you guys have those pretty well in hand. Physical change, a change in size, shape, or state, where state means solid, liquid, gas. No new substance is formed. That's important. A chemical change is a change in the physical and chemical properties, or a new substance is formed. So sodium chloride, table salt, dissolves in water. Did we make anything new when that sodium chloride dissolved in water? I don't know that I terribly like this one either. Again, these go borderline of what is a chemical and a physical change. Let me pick something that's a little bit better. Let's do the silver tarnishes. And in order to know what the silver tarnishes means, this is silver reacting with oxygen to produce silver oxide. That's what the tarnish is silver oxide. Is that physical or is that chemical?
I believe it's chemical.
That is chemical. That's good. Okay. Iron rusts. This is iron reacting with oxygen gas to produce Fe2O3. Actually, and to balance this out, I need a whole different ratio. I need two of these. That's 6 and 3 and 4. Okay. Iron rusting.
Chemical as well?
Chemical as well. Let's talk about ice melting.
A physical, it's just changing states.
Exactly. Nice. Okay. Alcohol evaporates. Number 7.
Physical, I think.
That is physical. Nice.
What would you say for number 13? I was looking this over in class because he demonstrated it, and he didn't talk about it, and I was kind of unsure what direction he wanted you to evaluate.
Yeah. If we say a change in size, shape, or state, but grass growing, I don't like that one again, because I can make an argument that grass growing is the conversion of oxygen of carbon dioxide into oxygen and sugars in order to make new structure, in which case it would be a chemical change.
Right. But, okay.
But under this, if you go a change in size or shape, and we say that this thing is growing, grass grows, then it sounds like it's a physical change. But I would be inclined to say that this is really a chemical process that's taking place. Because it's not changing shape without changing material. There's new material that's being added to it, and that material is coming from a chemical reaction. A tire is inflated. A tire being inflated is really a physical change. That's where something is really changing its size by stretching it, by expanding it. So that's really physical. But yeah, some of these are definitely not clear cut. So, and that's going to be the case no matter what he gives you. Sometimes you're going to be met with some that are not clear cut. So what I would say is that if you are doing something like that and you have the ability to be able to give some reasoning as to why you're choosing something, give the reasoning so that your instructor can look at it and either give you credit for it based on your reason or give you partial credit based on your reason, right? So it's not just a right or wrong type statement. That's what I would try to do there. These are physical and chemical changes too. For instance, a bicycle changes colors as it rusts. That is a chemical change. A solid is crushed into a powder. That is a physical change. Two substances are mixed and light is produced. That is a chemical change. So there's all these things here that we can look at and point to chemical and physical. Decide whether a physical or chemical change has occurred and give evidence for your decision. Oh, these are examples of where I said here where you would want to put your reasoning. A student removes a loaf of bread hot from the oven. The student cuts a slice off the loaf and spreads butter on it.
I know.
I don't even know what to do with that. I would say that this is physical because there's been no chemical reaction that has happened between the bread. You have cut the bread and you have melted butter. And so cutting the bread does not change the bread. You are dividing something into smaller portions. That's changing its size, and so that's a physical change. And the melting of butter is also a physical change. So things like that, that's how I would try to decide to answer those. Your friend decides to toast a piece of bread, but leaves it in the toaster too long. The bread is black, and the kitchen is full of smoke. This is a chemical, and you have burned the bread. And the burning is bread plus oxygen goes to make burnt toast. It winds up making incomplete combustion, but you're making burnt sugars essentially is what is coming out of that. So those are the types of answers that I would give for some of those types of things. Okay, now we get into stoichiometry. And this was a part Karen was asking about. Alejandra was asking about dimensional analysis, stoichiometry, those types of things. This is where we start to get into it. And this is one where we started to talk about roadmaps and making roadmaps to answer these types of questions. And so what I like to do when I do a problem like this, the bromine content of the ocean is 65 grams of bromine per million grams of seawater. How many cubic meters of ocean must be processed to recover 500 milligrams of bromine if the density of seawater is 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms per cubic meter? The first thing that I like to do is try to find the desired. I parse these problems. So number one, parse the problem. by parsing the problem, what I want you to do is I want you to identify the given, desired, and any given equalities. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say my given is going to be in blue, my desired is going to be in red, and any equalities that I'm finding are going to be in green. The bromine content of the ocean is 65 grams of bromine per million grams of seawater. How many? Okay, as soon as I see how many starts off a question. That's my desired. Cubic meters of ocean. Okay, so I want cubic meters of ocean. So over here under desired, I'm looking for cubic meters. And this is going to be of ocean. And that's my desired. And then be processed to recover 500 milligrams of bromine. That to recover 500 milligrams of bromine, that is the given. Usually the desired and the given are linked together in the same sentence. And so I'm starting over here with milligrams of bromine. And then everything else is an equality. So equalities that are here. The bromine content is 65 per million grams of seawater. That's an equality. The density of seawater is 1 times 10 to the third kilograms per cubic meter. That's an equality. So I'm going to write them as equalities. I'm going to take them from words, and I'm going to write it out as an equality. 65 grams of bromine is equal to 1 million grams of seawater. And the density is 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms. Is equal to 1 cubic meter of water. And this idea that I put ocean over here, I'm going to change that from ocean to really water, because that's what the ocean is. And that's going to keep my units a little bit easier to see. So once I've parsed it like this, and I've parsed out the problem, and this is my given, and this is my desired, and these are my equalities. Now I'm going to construct the roadmap using the equalities and maybe some other equalities that may not be listed, such as those three keys conversion factors. So number two, roadmap. So we've got milligrams of bromine. And the thing to do is to look at your equalities and to find bromine in your equalities. It goes to grams. Well, milligrams and grams are not the same thing. So I can't use this equality yet. I have to go from milligrams of bromine, and it looks like I have to go to grams of bromine. So from milligrams to grams, and then I can use this and convert from grams to water. So now I can go from grams of bromine to grams of water. And then if you notice, this one takes you to kilograms of water, but I'm in grams. I need to get to kilograms before I can use this equality. So I need to go from grams of water to kilograms of water. And now I can use this equality to take me to cubic meters. And so this kilograms will go there to cubic meters. Each one of these arrows represents an equality. So 1 gram is equal to 1,000 milligrams. 65 grams of bromine equals 1 million grams of water. The arrow here is that 1 kilogram equals 1,000 grams. And the last one here, 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms of water is equal to 1 cubic meter of water. And now I have all of the equalities and I have a roadmap and a way of stepping from place to place. Does everybody follow what I did there in terms of that roadmap? I mean, the hard parts are understanding the leaps, going from milligrams that I have to go to grams before I can use this conversion factor. So you have to understand that milligrams to grams, that's a memorized conversion factor or a memorized equality that needs to be there. Okay.
Where did we get the million grams?
The million grams, this conversion factor here?
Right.
That one came from right here. The density of seawater is 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms per cubic meter. So when you see a conversion factor like this, this is the way this is written. That conversion factor literally means 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms of whatever it is, so this is water, of whatever it is equal to 1 cubic meter of whatever that is. We can interpret this in a number of different ways. Let me try to write it another way to segue between these two. So let me do this. Let me take that and say this can be written this way. 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms over cubic meters. And then that could be written this way. 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms over 1 cubic meter. And then that could be turned into, it's 1.0 times 10 to the third kilograms of water equals 1 cubic meter of water. And so anytime you have a bar, let's use this color. Every time you have a bar like that, a slash, that slash is an equality and can be represented as an equality. Does that help to see it?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so you gotta watch for those, particularly with densities like this. Okay, so now that we have all of that, now what we wanna do is we parsed our problem, we made our roadmap. Number three, we're going to write the calculation. So in writing the calculation, now I take the value that they gave me, 500 milligrams of bromine. And then I string together my conversion factors. So milligrams of bromine goes in the denominator. My first desired grams of bromine goes in the numerator. And I then set the values 1 to 1,000. Grams of bromine goes in the denominator. My next desired, grams of water in the numerator. I fill in the values, 65 grams of bromine to 1 million grams of water. Grams of water now goes in the denominator. My next stop, kilograms of water, goes in the numerator. And for every 1 kilogram, it's 1,000 grams. Kilograms now goes in the denominator. My final desired cubic meters of water goes in the numerator. And for every 1.0 times 10 to the third, it is 1 cubic meter. Now, when I go through the dimensional analysis, milligrams cancels milligrams. Grams cancels grams. Grams of water cancels grams of water. kilograms of water cancels kilograms of water, and I'm left with one unit, and it appears in the numerator. Now, after I write the calculation, and I made sure that everything worked, now I'm going to perform the calculation. And then 5, I'm going to do sig figs. Okay, so to perform the calculation, I'm going to go through and I'm going to take 500, divide by 1,000, multiply by 1,000,000, divide by 1,000, divide by 1E3. I lost my 65, didn't I? Divide by 65. I should have caught that divide by 65 right there. It was here in the denominator and I missed it. But it can go in any order. So I can go back and I can catch it. Equals. This equals a value that is 0.00769230769269. It's going to repeat 692307 all the rest of the way. This is in cubic meters of H2O. And then I got to go through and I got to do sig figs. So I have to decide how many sig figs are in this first value, 500 with a decimal. 3. Good. How many sig figs are in the 1 to 1,000 milligrams to grams? Trick question, be careful.
It's a definition, right? So it has no significant numbers.
Good. That is correct. What about this 65 to 1,000,000? Ah, that's a hard one, isn't it? I don't like this conversion factor very much because 65 grams of bromine per 1,000,000 grams of seawater. This is 65 grams per 1,000,000 grams is 65 parts per 1,000,000. And the sig figs are carried in the 65. So it's really 2 sig figs, but I don't like it because you wouldn't really know that unless you understood that this was parts per 1,000,000, ppm, and the way in which we're using parts per 1,000,000. What about the kilograms to grams? How about that piece?
Same thing, definition.
Definition. What about this density? 1.0 times 10 to the third.
Two sig figs.
Good. Okay, so the smallest appears to be in 2 places, 2 sig figs. So if we round this off to 2 sig figs, now we've got to write this the correct way. This is going to be 0.0077 cubic meters of water, or I could write it 7.7 times 10 to the minus third cubic meters of water. Both of those answers should be correct. And I saw up here, oh, look at that. There was our answer. And so we're good. 7.7 times 10 to the minus third cubic meters of water. Okay, how did that, I know that's a complicated problem, but how about the process? Do you understand the process? Is the process good?
Yeah, this is actually the process that I use. I use your method rather than Francisco.
Okay. All good. I like parsing it out. I particularly like parsing it out with color. Tends to help me. Grabbing those equalities, making sure that the roadmap is all in one place, knowing what these equalities are, and then writing it all out, tracking your sig figs, doing your rounding, getting your answer. It's kind of where I like to go. Hey, we've been working for... Question. Oh, please, go for it.
So I know that you have to get the inequalities, I think you mentioned. So the 1 gram equals 1,000 milligrams.
Yes.
What do you suggest I do during the exams? Because that's not in my head, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know that, so...
Okay.
Are there any tips on how I should get those inequalities?
Well, okay, so they're equalities, not inequalities. Equalities. And look, your test is remote, right? You're in class for Cisco.
No, I'm with Canton.
Oh, you're with Canton. Luca, so you're remote.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah, I'm online.
Okay, if you're online and you're remote, then you can have any number of resources in front of you that you want to have in front of you. So what I would recommend is that if you're remote, what I would do is say, look, let's create a sheet of important dimensional analysis equalities. So these are things that you're expected to memorize, or that we would be, if we were in person, we would be expected to memorize these, and we would not be given a cheat sheet for these. The first three are what I call the three keys. This is one for mass, length, and distance. No, wait, mass, length, and volume. There we go. I get it. So mass is going to be 1 pound is equal to 453.6 grams. Length is 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters. And volume is 1 gallon is equal to 3.785 liters. These are sig figs wise, 4 sig figs. Exact and 4 sig figs. Okay, so those are three that I definitely recommend having down someplace or memorizing. Then what I would say is that we have the SI system. So for the SI system, we have the base unit. We have centi, milli. We have micro, nano, femto. We wouldn't go beyond that. And going up, we usually start instead of, could go deca, but we usually start at kilo, and then mega, giga, tera, and we don't usually go too far beyond that. The definitions or the abbreviations for these, capital T, capital G, capital M, lowercase k, capital D, centi is a lowercase c, a lowercase m, micro is the mu symbol, nano lowercase n, femto lowercase f, and the base does not have a definition. And then these are times 10 to the minus 2, times 10 to the minus 3, times 10 to the minus 6, times 10 to the minus 9, and times 10 to the minus 12. Going up, times 10 to the first, times 10 to the third, times 10 to the sixth, times 10 to the ninth, times 10 to the 12th. Okay, now how do I use these? The way to use these is that when you want to go to the base unit, let's say that I have There's a number of different ways to do it. You can say that 1 centimeter equals 1 × 10⁻². So what you're doing is you're saying, all right, here is my centi, and my centi means × 10⁻². So you're literally replacing the C with × 10⁻². We can do that same idea here, that I could say that 1 millimeter is equal to 1 × 10⁻³ meters. I literally take the lowercase m and replace it with × 10⁻³. Or in case of nano, 1 nanometer, or micrometer, excuse me, is equal to 1 × 10⁻⁶ meters. The other way that I remember these, oh wait, we can go up too. Let's go up real quick. 1 kilometer is equal to 1 × 10³ meters, replacing the K with × 10³. Or mega, 1 megameter equals 1 × 10⁶ meters. Okay. The other way that I remember this is that this is 1 kilometer equals 1,000 meters. × 10³ is 1,000. And so we could do it that way. The other one that's common down here is centi and milli, that we oftentimes remember that there is 100 centimeters equals 1 meter, or that there are 1,000 millimeters equals 1 meter. Literally, all you're doing is taking this number and inverting it. So 1 divided by 1 × 10⁻³ is 1,000. 1 divided by 1 × 10⁻²  is 100. We do that commonly with these three because it's a unit of 1,000, 100, and 1,000. We don't generally do that when we get up to the higher conversion factors. We generally use the higher conversion factors with their scientific notation. But what I would do is I would make this cheat sheet right here, important dimensional analysis equalities. And I would have that sitting at the table with me as you did the report or as you did the exam. Okay. So just before that question came in, I was going to say, this is probably a good spot for a break. Let's take a break here, and then we'll come back and we'll start dealing with the mole and some of the dimensional analysis stuff with the mole, and we'll get set up for that. So let's take a 5-minute break or even a little bit longer. Let's come back at 2:20, and we'll start tackling the mole. Sound like a plan? All right, 2:20, we'll come back. I'll see you in a few minutes.
Well, it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, baby, even you don't know by now. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, baby, it'll never do somehow. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on, but don't think twice, it's all right. And it ain't no use in the turning on your light, babe, the light I never knowed. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, babe, I'm on the dark side of the road. But I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway. But don't think twice, it's all right. So it ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, like you never done before. And it ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, I can't hear you anymore. I'm a-thinking and a-wondering, walking down the road. I once loved a woman, a child, I'm told. I gave her my heart, but she wanted my soul. But don't think twice, it's all right. So long, honey, baby, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, baby, so I just say fairly well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind, you could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's all right.
Just to keep on living for today. time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Ah, check out the crabs in the bucket. It's like flies on a windscreen, riding on walls. Square biz clones claim they're having a ball. Feeling themselves just before last call. Tick, tick, tock, tick, tick, tock. Clock strikes 12, clock strikes 1. Smoking gun puts these fools on the run. I know it's not that simple. I know it's not that hard. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Ah, check out the crabs in the bucket. It's a conniption fit when the microphone's lit. I take it high like a bird on a wire. Retire the fire, I never, cause I'm just moving on up. Choosing to touch the unseen, craving the clutch. Damn, the fears were created by sand. When I'm looking in the water for reflections of man. Understand the mind above time when it's empty. MC tragically hit ahead by a century. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Ah, check out the crabs in the bucket. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Ah.
Okay, I'm back. I apologize.